Hello, this is the Global News Podcast from the BBC World Service with reports and analysis from across the world. The latest news 7 days a week. BBC World Service podcasts are supported by advertising.
Welcome to Abu Dhabi Unwrapped, a sonic travel guide. The audio adventure whisking you away for the trip of a lifetime. From the white marble domes of Abu Dhabi's iconic mosque to the Emirates' pearl diving pass. From wild water parks to the ultimate driving experience. Be sure to subscribe wherever you like to listen to catch the series. Paid for and presented by the Department of Culture and Tourism Abu Dhabi.
Challenge yourself as a leader and transform your career with a top-ranked MBA from Berkeley Haas. Gain access to a world-class university located in the epicenter of innovation and engage with renowned faculty, mentors, and collaborative peers. The evening and weekend MBA program delivers a robust MBA experience on your schedule. Excel in your current role while building leadership skills for what comes next. Visit haas.org/apply to start your Berkeley Haas application today.
This is the Global News Podcast from the BBC World Service. Hello, I'm Oliver Conway. This edition is published in the early hours of Friday, the 13th of January. The US Justice Department appoints a special counsel to investigate President Biden's handling of classified material after government documents are found at his house. The Brazilian president says the protesters who ransacked government buildings on Sunday had inside help from members of the security forces. And the shocking story of Afghan children held in Pakistani jails.
The children are being kept in prison, particularly in Karachi, since last 3 to 4 months, and they were below 9.
We hear from the man who exposed the story. Also in the podcast, the female bakers arrested in Malawi for decorating a cake with a local currency. Kate Blanchett tells us about her role as the conductor Lydia Tarr, which landed her a Golden Globe.
The character I play, Lydia Tarr, because she's at the zenith of her career, she's in a way putting legacy before the process. And I think you see the tragic results of that.
And the hunt for a cat that's been missing in an airport in Bolivia for a month.
I personally believe that the cat Tito is still alive. The cat likes tuna, so we have left out tuna in the surrounding areas.
When FBI agents found more than 300 classified documents at Donald Trump's Mar-a-Lago residence in August, the former president was branded totally irresponsible by his successor, Joe Biden. Now the shoe is on the other foot after 10 classified documents from Mr. Biden's days as vice president were discovered at the office of a think tank in Washington, and then another batch at a storage space at his home in Delaware. Speaking at the White House, President Biden said he takes the issue seriously.
We're cooperating fully and completely with the Justice Department's review. As part of that process, my lawyers reviewed other places where documents from my time as vice president were stored, and they finished the review last night. They discovered a small number of documents of classified markings in storage areas and file cabinets in my home and my personal library. The Department of Justice was immediately notified. And the lawyers arranged for the Department of Justice to take possession of the document.
But the new Republican Speaker of the House of Representatives, Kevin McCarthy, was unimpressed.
Here's an individual that's been in office for more than 40 years. Here's an individual that was so concerned about President Trump's documents locked in behind, and now we find it just as a vice president, keeping it for years out in the open in different locations. I do not think any American believes that justice should not be equal to all.
Well, U.S. Attorney General Merrick Garland has appointed a special counsel to investigate Mr. Biden's actions, just as he did in Donald Trump's case. I asked our Washington correspondent Gary O'Donoghue first what we know about the latest discovery of documents.
Well, they were kept in President Biden's garage at his home in Delaware, along with his 1967 Corvette sports car, apparently. He tells us that the garage was locked, but clearly that's still not very secure for classified documents. The first batch were discovered back in November. The second batch found in December. We're only learning about them this week. And I think that's because, in part, this Justice Department, or the initial stages of the investigation, have concluded, and the attorney who was running that, who's a Trump-era attorney, has recommended the appointment of a special counsel, which the Attorney General has now done.
Yeah, what does that mean? What will the special counsel be looking at, and what could it mean for President Biden?
Well, they'll be looking at whether any entity or person has committed a crime, quite simply. The reason for the special counsel, according to Merrick Garland, is to ensure accountability, to ensure that in something like a sensitive matter, there's accountability. And what he means by that is, look, I was appointed by Joe Biden. I want this investigation to be arm's length from the Justice Department so no one can accuse me of bias in it. So that's why the reason for the special counsel. It creates a symmetry with the investigation that the special counsel is conducting into Donald Trump and the documents he didn't hand over. Democrats, of course, very quick to point out that the similarities are superficial here, that Donald Trump didn't cooperate when they went after the documents, that it took the FBI to issue a subpoena, a court to issue a search warrant and a search of his Mar-a-Lago property before hundreds of these things became apparent, and they insist that Joe Biden has cooperated all the way through. However, all that kind of detail may be lost on the American public, and boot is on the other shoe, the pot calling the kettle black. You can pick your metaphor here, can't you? It just doesn't look good.
But briefly, does it signal a wider problem among senior US politicians and their handling of documents?
Yeah, that's what struck me particularly. You know, how many other former presidents or former secretaries of state or former defense secretaries are now rooting through their garages to see what got left behind when they left office? I mean, it would be surprising if these were isolated, wouldn't it?
Gary O'Donoghue in Washington. When thousands of supporters of the defeated far-right Brazilian president stormed government buildings on Sunday, there were allegations the police didn't do enough to stop them. The demonstrators were unhappy at Jair Bolsonaro's narrow election defeat in October and were calling for the overthrow of the left-wing winner, Luiz Inácio Lula da Silva. Hundreds of the protesters are now in custody, but President Lula has accused some in the security forces of actively assisting them, even leaving the doors of the presidential palace open. Our America's editor Leonardo Rocha reports.
In a media conference, President Lula said there was no evidence of forced entry, which reinforced the suspicions from many in the Brazilian government that there was collusion from part of the army and the police. Supporters of the former president, Jair Bolsonaro, also stormed the Congress building and the Supreme Court headquarters, calling for a military coup against a veteran left-wing leader. Videos posted online show them breaking windows and destroying property inside the buildings, including valuable artwork, while many police and army officers watch passively. President Lula described the attacks as a huge warning, showing that fanatic Bolsonaro supporters were very dangerous, as they continued to refuse accepting the result of October's elections. He added that his defense minister, José Múcio, had made mistakes in the run-up to Sunday's violence, but said he wouldn't be sacked. Lula, who's been in power for less than 2 weeks, knows that he can't afford to alienate anyone in his fragile governing coalition at this stage, as he tries to tackle alarming levels of poverty and inequality in Brazil.
Our America's regional editor, Leonardo Rocha. A day after he was appointed a deputy commander of Russian operations in Ukraine, General Oleg Salyukov has visited Belarus to, quote, inspect the combat readiness of a joint force stationed there. Russia launched its initial assault on Kiev from Belarus, and there are fears it may try again, though President Zelensky has said he doesn't think an attack is imminent. So what is going on that northern border? Our security correspondent is Frank Gardner.
Military analysts don't really believe that there's any evidence that there is about to be an invasion from Belarus, a repeated invasion, just as Russia did about a year ago, using Belarus as a springboard, nor that Belarusian national government forces, the army, will take part in a thrust south. But that said, there is something called Guard Service, which is a Belarusian PMC, that's a private military company, kind of equivalent to the Wagner Group that Russia uses as a kind of proxy army that's got plausible deniability, a kind of dirty arm of the government, as it were, that the government can say, well, they're nothing to do with us, but actually they're acting on government orders. And there is evidence that they have been recently recruiting in Belarus, trying to build up their forces, And it's possible that they could be deployed in some form, not necessarily to invade Ukraine from Belarus, but to bolster Russian forces, because, of course, manpower is the big problem. And Russia has been running out of places and facilities to train its troops. So it's no secret that they've sent thousands of troops to Belarus to get trained up there. But at the moment, there's no sign that they're looking to invade northern Ukraine from there.
You mentioned the Russian mercenary group Wagner. They, of course, are playing a big role in that battle in the east of Ukraine. They're trying to take the town of Soledar near Bakhmut. And that fighting is apparently still going on. Let's just listen to a Ukrainian soldier there.
The situation is difficult but stable. The positions are being held and no one is leaving. We're fighting back. The intensity of shelling has risen by about 70%, but nothing has changed radically.
Intense fighting there. The Ukrainians say the Russians are fighting over the bodies of their dead comrades. Russia clearly desperate for a symbolic victory, at least.
Russia is desperate for some kind of a victory because it's largely been either on the retreat or in stalemate mode for quite some time now. And both sides, Russia and Ukraine, have thrown huge numbers of forces at this battle for a relatively unimportant part of eastern Donbass. It's really depressing how this is a First World War style battle of attrition where thousands are dying for no great gain on either side.
Our security correspondent, Frank Gardner. To Pakistan now, where there's been shock at images of Afghan children, some as young as five, being kept in prison. They're packed into a cell and are seen reaching out from behind the bars. They're being kept in a crowded jail in Karachi alongside convicted criminals as they await a court decision on whether to send them back to Afghanistan. The BBC's James Copnell spoke to the man who took the photo that caused such a storm on social media, Pakistani lawyer Samar Abbas.
The situation of Afghanistan after Taliban takeover, the millions of Afghan families fled to the neighboring countries, including Iran and Pakistan, to save their life. And many of them entered into Pakistan and then they were arrested in Karachi along with their children. Then the children are being kept in prison, particularly in Karachi, since last 3 to 4 months, and they were below 9. And the children who are below 9 are with their mothers, while the children who are above 9 are in juvenile jail. They are facing the charges since most of the children have no ID document or any birth certificate. They are being separated in jail from their parents on the basis of assumption of their ages.
In some cases, young children, fairly young children, on their own. Were you able to get a chance to talk to any of them to see how they were coping?
They were in inhuman environment in which they got some skin diseases. Some of them are convicted under Section 14, which says that they intentionally crossed the border with no documents.
I'm looking at certainly one of them, sort of young faces peering out between those metal bars. Since you took it and since it became very sort of public, just talk to us a little bit about the reaction, how people have responded to it.
When I uploaded the picture, I got a very strong response from the international and national community. Many of them condemned this widely, and the women and the children who fled from Afghanistan. And we say that they are the victims of war. And I also wrote that they were forced by the country's socio-political situation to cross the border and enter into the neighboring countries. And as a neighbor and as a human being, we should accept them. First, the government of Sindh and the state of Pakistan denied the fact that the picture is from Pakistan. It was taken somewhere else. They were in denial. But later on, when the pressure was developed, they had to accept that they have children behind bars. They have women behind bars. Now, after that picture that I captured, the government deported more than 500 people, including women and children.
Pakistani lawyer Samar Abbas talking to James Copnell. A new study carried out by scientists in Britain and the US has suggested that dolphins are struggling to hear each other because of human-made noise pollution. The research found that underwater noise from shipping and construction had risen in recent years, and this could be affecting the health of wild dolphin populations. Our science reporter Esme Stallard has been looking at the findings.
Dolphins are highly social and intelligent creatures. Like many marine mammals, they rely on whistles and echolocation to work together for hunting and reproducing. Scientists already know that they increase the volume and frequency of their calls to try to compensate for noise pollution from ships and drilling. But for the first time, scientists from Bristol University and the Dolphin Research Centre have discovered that the levels of man-made sound at sea have got so loud dolphins can no longer shout over it. Pernille Sorensen is the lead author of the study.
If you are exposed to noise and that prevents you from communicating with your friends, for example, when you're foraging together, it might lead to missed opportunities and in that sense could have an impact on your individual health if it's a certain behaviour that's essential to your survival.
The researchers believe these communication problems could seriously affect the ability of dolphin pods to work as teams and have a detrimental impact on their survival in the wild.
Esme Stallard. Still to come on the Global News podcast.
The shock and awe on my stupid face is completely legitimate. It's always something that I strive for and I hope for.
Sam Ryder surprised to join the likes of Harry Styles in being nominated for the Brit Awards. But no women have been nominated for the Best Artist Prize. 4 years ago this week, Al-Shabaab militants stormed a luxury hotel and office complex in the Kenyan capital, Nairobi, killing more than 20 people. On Thursday, the US government offered $10 million for information leading to the arrest of the alleged mastermind of the attack, Mohamed Abdi Aden. The BBC's Richard Kagoe was at the news conference in Nairobi where the reward was announced, and he started by telling me more about the attack itself.
The attack happened a few blocks from our BBC office in Nairobi, and I could hear actually the gunshots going out, the explosions happening at this office complex. The country had been reeling from the effects of numerous attacks that had taken place in the country, and most notably the attack on a very upscale shopping mall called the Westgate in 2013. And so this happening right in an area that you would really consider to be a green zone, which is very secure, an office complex hosting multinationals. So this really struck right at the heart of the city and made people really realize just how vulnerable we were still, despite all the efforts that have been done by the security agencies to reassure Kenya that they had been secure. But what we can say is that the response for this particular attack was very, very timely. And also the way the police were able to coordinate with various security agencies to neutralize the attackers who had stormed this compound. So it was something that still lingers in the minds of many, still fresh in the minds of many.
Now, this attack happened in 2019. Why is the US announcing this reward now?
That's really been the question, because the country doesn't seem to have moved on from this attack. One very devastating raid that took place on Kenyan soil. Investigations have been ongoing. And I guess now the fact that the US have been in a partnership in terms of counterterrorism efforts with the Kenyan police, they've come to the conclusion that it's about time for them to place this bounty on the head of Mohamed Abdi Aden, who's still been at large.
Yeah, what is known about this alleged mastermind?
He's a Kenyan national, and he was leading a cell that planned the Dusit two hotel attacks. So this happening within this upscale office or business and a hotel complex in west of Nairobi. He was really high up in the ranks of the Al-Shabaab terrorist group based in Somalia and also with cells in Kenya.
Richard Kagoe in Nairobi. Two bakers have been arrested in Malawi for decorating a cake with local currency. Police say the bakers posted a photo of the cake on social media to advertise their business. Here's our Africa regional editor, Mary Harper.
The offending photo shows a two-tier cake adorned with neatly rolled up banknotes, wrapped with a bright pink ribbon and topped with elaborate white, blue and yellow icing. There are 70 notes in total, worth about $35. The two young ladies are in custody. They've been charged with the offence of damaging and unlawful use of currency and risk a large fine if convicted. Malawi's central bank has complained about the huge cost of printing new banknotes. It blames the improper use of notes as one of the reasons they have to be replaced so regularly.
Mary Harper. The Australian actress Kate Blanchett won a Golden Globe this week for her critically acclaimed performance as a virtuoso music conductor in the film Tar. She's now tipped for an Oscar as well. Her character, who runs a major German orchestra, faces accusations of bullying and predatory behaviour more normally associated with some men. And as a result, the film has come in for a bit of criticism, most recently from America's most high-profile woman conductor, Marin Alsop. Kate Blanchett has been talking to the BBC's Martha Carney, who started by asking her if winning awards still mattered to Blanchett, who's already got 2 Oscars, 3 BAFTAs and 4 Golden Globes.
I have a lot of books, and so you need a lot of bookends, and they're rather heavy. Look, if you put the applause before the process, that's bending the cart. This film is all about process, and so it reminded me once again how you just have to engage deeply in what you're doing, hoping that if you're engaged, an audience will be engaged. And those things are wonderful, particularly when they come from your peers, but it's not the point of doing it. And in a way, the character I play, Lydia Tarr, because she's at the zenith of her career, she's in a way putting legacy before the process, and I think you see the tragic results of that.
Very tragic results, but an extraordinary performance by you, I have to say. And how would you describe the character of Lydia Tarr? Complicated.
She's incredibly complicated, one of the most sort of ambiguous and enigmatic characters that I think I've ever had the good grace to play. I mean, every day I sort of went into battle with her and her circumstances. I mean, she's a maestro conductor who has the unassailable right to lead one of the world's greatest orchestras. She's a genius in that way, a female genius, but she's out of step with herself and she's lost her way. And I think often that can happen no matter what your profession is. Then outward measures of success can seem like an armature and everything is in place, but internally you've lost your mojo. The challenge and the fascination for me was to play the sort of the fragility and the sense of encroaching doubt that she had, even though she was at an incredible high point in her career and incredibly successful, because often those two things don't marry up.
We see the kind of pressures on Lydia Tarr, the musical genius, but also accusations of pretty appalling behaviour, which is more the kind of behaviour that we hear about predatory men in the arts. So what do you think about the fact that the way the tables were turned and it was a woman facing those accusations?
I mean, it is a meditation on power and the corrupting nature of power, and I think that that doesn't necessarily happen only in cultural circles. I mean, she could just as well have been a master architect or the head of a major banking corporation. It is also about giving birth to something, end of the creative process, but the destructive urge behind that as well, and I feel that there's a self-combustion in her. But I don't think you could have talked about the corrupting nature of power in as nuanced a way as Todd feels has done as a filmmaker if there was a male at the centre of it, because we understand so absolutely what that looks like. And I think that power is a corrupting force no matter what one's gender is. I think it affects all of us.
Marin Alsop herself, a very famous conductor, mm-hmm. and who people point out parallels. She's a very famous conductor in the United States. She's a lesbian. She has a relationship with somebody in an orchestra. They have a child together. And she thinks the film is wrong.
Wrong. Look, I have the utmost respect for Marin Alsop. She's a trailblazer of a musician and a conductor, and it's a very provocative film, and it will elicit a lot of very strong responses for people. What Todd and I wanted to do was to create a really lively conversation. So there's no right or wrong responses to works of art. It's not a film about conducting, and I think that the circumstances of the character are entirely fictitious.
Kate Blanchett talking to Martha Carney. Artificial intelligence seems to crop up in a new aspect of life almost every day. The latest example comes from Apple, which has started releasing audiobooks with digital rather than human narrators.
She tugged on a pulley at the end of the greenhouse and opened a 2x2 flap on the end wall. The vents had been Danielle's idea when she put the structure together. She'd installed one vent at each end to catch the gentle breezes that swept through the valley.
Abdullah climbed from the SUV as he closed the door. He could feel its extra weight. The door shut with a satisfying thunk. They'd molded 100 pounds of Semtex into the hood, doors, and quarter panels of the Toyota.
Excerpts from Loving from Afar by Mona Ingram and before that Dark Water by Evan Graver. One man who knows all about narrating audiobooks is actor Martin Jarvis. Evan Davis asked him what he thought of his AI rivals.
It was great to hear those little clips, but, you know, to listen to a full-length novel can be up to 10, 12 hours. And I just wonder whether those artificial readers, very nicely and cleverly put together, could actually go that distance.
Yeah, one of the conclusions about AI is it's not going to wipe out the people who really bring top-class narration to audiobooks. It'll just wipe out a whole layer of mediocre readers. But the people who can really add character to the book are never going to be replaced by the AI. So maybe that's where we'll end up.
What I do think would probably be good is that technical books might do very well with artificial intelligence, where it can go on. You don't want too much drama. I remember once doing The Highway Code as an audiobook, and I had to comb out my slightly dramatic instincts. We don't want too much drama of the wrong sort on the road. Maybe technical books are the way to go. But certainly, what do you do about something like Dickens or anything that's got different flavours of character? You know, I'm just making something up as I go along. Something like, she answered in a light, lilting, flirtatious voice, "Well, I love you, darling." Now, I'm just making something up, but if that were done in the way we've just heard, would it not sound a little bit more, "She answered in a lilting, flirtatious voice, I love you, darling"? Would that actually keep the audience awake for enough of a time?
Martin, there is a technology that will allow you to speak for an hour in a tape recorder, and then you will be able to read the book digitally without actually having to go through the trouble of reading the book. It will be Martin Jarvis's voice. Has anyone approached you about doing something like that? I don't even know whether you have the rights to your voice.
I don't know. Sometimes one is surprised. You turn on the radio or the television and you suddenly hear your voice and you didn't know whether you've given the rights for that to be played or not. But usually one is perfectly pleased about it. But to record lots of words and things, that's not the point. It's a great privilege and a pleasure to be able to read anything from Woodhouse, Richard Crompton, Charles Dickens, Dick Francis, and now Felix Francis in the thriller world. It's a pleasure to do it, to communicate it, and hopefully to shoot the movie in the ear, if you like, and entertain people. That's why we do it. We don't really want the artificial to do it for us.
The human Martin Jarvis talking to Evan Davis. Tito the cat has caused quite a stir in Bolivia. The white and grey feline disappeared from the hold of a plane last month. He's thought to have been roaming the airport ever since. His story has fueled widespread criticism of the country's state-run industries. Now the government has appointed an animal psychic to try to find him. Rachel Wright takes up the story.
Andrea Ituru begged the Bolivian airline BOA to allow her to bring her three-year-old cat Tito into the cabin with her on an internal flight between Tarija and Santa Cruz, but they put him in the hold. On arrival, Andrea went to reclaim her luggage and found an empty pet carrier. Tito, according to the airline officials, had disappeared at Tarija Airport even before they'd taken off. A distraught Andrea posted her story on social media, and Bolivians weighed in, criticising what they called the indifference of the state-run airline. The Minister of Public Works, Edgar Montano, responded with a live press conference on state TV.
We believe, and I personally believe, that the cat Tito is still alive. We have left out food. The cat likes tuna, so we have left out tuna in the surrounding areas. We have also left out water, so that Tito remains nourished. We hope that Tito the cat will reappear.
Mr. Montano said he instructed the fire department and staff from four different state agencies to help find the cat. But 4 weeks later, and there's still no sign of Tito. So now the Minister for Consumer Rights has appointed an interspecies communicator, an animal psychic to you or I, who is working remotely in the Bolivian capital of Paz. Here the minister is discussing the psychic on Bolivian Talk Radio.
Through her techniques, she can communicate with Tito to find out where he is, if he is scared or hiding, or if something more serious has happened.
The incident has prompted ridicule and criticism of Bolivia's socialist government, which has run the country since 2006. But for Andrea, it's just about Tito.
I have not stopped and I will not stop looking until I am able to be with him. My only mission, my only interest and my only goal is to find Tito.
Andrea may take succor from the tale of Rowdy the Cat, who roamed Boston Airport in the US for 20 days in July last year. She was finally found fit and healthy, having lived on the airport's plentiful supply of tasty mice and rats.
Rachel Wright reporting. The UK's top music awards, the Brits, will be handed out next month. And on Thursday, we found out the main nominees are Harry Styles and the indie band Wet Leg. Currently touring together in the US, they're up for 4 awards each. But there have been complaints that there are no women up for the Best Artist prize, a year after the Brit Awards scrapped male and female categories to try to make them more inclusive. This report from our music correspondent, Mark Savage. You know it's not the
same as it was. Harry Styles had the biggest selling single and album of last year, so his 4 nominations at the Brit Awards were almost guaranteed in advance. Hey you, over there, on the chaise longue in your underwear. Also picking up 4 nominations are Wet Leg, the Isle of Wight band who burst onto the scene 18 months ago with the hit single Chaise Longue.
When we started the band, we literally just thought that we were going to get to go to a few festivals, so it's a bit more than we bargained for. I'm up in
space. Sam Ryder has scored a first. He's the only Eurovision act ever to be nominated for Best Newcomer.
Well, I never knew that, so the shock and awe on my stupid face is completely legitimate. It's always something that I strive for and I hoped for.
In 2022, the Brits got rid of gendered awards. And this year, the prestigious Best Artist category is entirely made up of male artists, including the rappers Stormzy and Central Cee. But organisers say female acts account for 42% of the overall nominations, with newcomer Kat Burns picking up 3 for her breakout hit, Go. And the winners will be announced at a star-studded ceremony on Saturday, the 11th of February. I'll sing it loud in case you don't already know.
Pack up your stuff and go. Mark Savage on the Brits. And on the subject of Britain, can I ask a quick favour? We need some help putting together a special edition of the Global News podcast marking 3 years since the UK left the European Union. Has Brexit been a triumph or a disaster for global Britain, or something in between? We'd like to know what people around the world think of the UK now it's outside the EU. So please send in your thoughts, questions or comments to globalpodcast@bbc.co.uk. And if you could include a voice note recording, then we'll try to get a response from our Brexit experts, Rob Watson, Katja Adler and Darshini David. Thank you. And that is all from us for now, but there'll be a new edition of the Global News podcast later. This one was mixed by Lee Wilson and produced by Emma Joseph. Our editor's Karen Martin. I'm Oliver Conway. Until next time, goodbye.
Welcome to Abu Dhabi Unwrapped, a Sonic travel guide.
The audio journey whisking you off on an incredible Arabian adventure.
Today, I'm pulling out all the stops with an exclusive insight into Abu Dhabi's luxurious side. From glittering gold souks to luxury spas. Be sure to subscribe wherever you like to listen to catch the series. Paid for and presented by the Department of Culture and Tourism Abu Dhabi.
Challenge yourself as a leader and transform your career with a top-ranked MBA from Berkeley Haas. Gain access to a world-class university located in the epicenter of innovation and engage with renowned faculty, mentors, and collaborative peers. The evening and weekend MBA program delivers a robust MBA experience on your schedule. Excel in your current role while building leadership skills for what comes next. Visit haas.org/apply to start your Berkeley Haas application today.